Okay, so you have ought of obligation and ought of opportunity. I just want to make sure you're clear on this, so let me give you a couple examples. If I say to you that you ought to see Yosemite National Park in the month of May when the waterfalls are overflowing, is that an ought of obligation or opportunity? Right, opportunity. It's something you don't want to miss out on. Does it make you a bad person if you don't do it? Does it mean you're not fulfilling your duty if you don't do it? But you're missing out on a great opportunity. Another example. What if I say you ought to pay taxes? Is that an ought of obligation or opportunity? Definitely not an opportunity, okay? We can be clear on that. Yeah, it's an ought of obligation. It's something that you probably should do. All right, a third one. You ought to cheer for the Bulldogs. Obligation, opportunity. Someone said both. You're right. Yes, very good. It is. It is. It's both. It's an opportunity for great joy, right? You don't want to miss out on that opportunity. But also as a resident of Fresno, you have an obligation to do that. It's your duty, okay? So it's both an opportunity and an obligation. When I teach my boys about the topic of gratitude, and again, I said I believe that this is the most important of all the virtues. So it's something I try to instill in them. When I teach my boys about gratitude, I often teach it, in fact, I pretty much always teach it to them as an ought of obligation. That's the truth, I do. It's an ought of obligation. Because I find ingratitude particularly ugly and sinful and just disgusting. So I really want to instill in my boys gratitude instead of ingratitude. I do not want to raise ungrateful children. So I pretty much teach it as an ought of obligation. But over the course of life, it's hard to consistently work up gratitude if it's only an obligation. Because after a while, it becomes just one more thing that I should do, I ought to do, out of duty. But over time, that can become kind of a burden. And so it's really important that we understand that while there is certainly an obligation to pursue gratitude, gratitude is also an ought of opportunity. It's something that you don't want to miss out. It's the chance of a lifetime. You don't want to miss out on it. For one reason, gratitude is the gateway to happiness. You cannot become a happy person if you're not grateful. And the flip side of that is also true. An ingrate cannot be happy. Okay, so it is the gateway to happiness. That's why it's an opportunity. You don't want to miss out on it. That's why it's so important. But in addition to that, gratitude is also the gateway to health and well-being and just overall wholeness of life. A fantastic opportunity. Recently, there was a research project that was done by two men, one by the name of Robert Clemens and the other Michael McCullough. And they put out a book a couple years ago based on their research, and it's a great book, and it falls under the category of the psychology of happiness. But they figured out that there just wasn't much academic work, research being done on the topic of gratitude. And so they looked into it from a, I guess you might say, a scientific standpoint. So what they did is they took people, test subjects, and they divided their test subjects into three different groups. And the first group, they had people keep a daily journal of good things, things that they were thankful for. The second group kept a journal of just things that were neutral, just life events that were not necessarily good, not necessarily bad, not necessarily grateful, not necessarily annoying, just neutral stuff. And then the third group just kept a journal of the things that were annoying and that were a hassle and they wished that they didn't have to bother with, or in fact, that were just downright bad. So three different groups keeping three different types of journals. And at the end of the test, they then interviewed the subjects. And they had two significant findings based on the study. The first one was this. Those who kept gratitude journals exercised more regularly, reported fewer physical symptoms, felt better about their lives as a whole, and were more optimistic about the upcoming week compared to those who recorded hassles or neutral life events. Okay? Just had a better outlook on life and did things that were better for them. That was the first major finding of this study. Second one was that participants who kept gratitude journals were more likely to have made progress toward important personal goals, whether they were academic, interpersonal, and health-based, and over a two-month period compared to subject in the other experimental conditions. So not only did the test subjects feel better about life, but they actually pursued life differently. Those are the two main findings of the study. And then there were two conclusions that the researchers came to based on this. First one, grateful people report higher levels of positive emotions, life satisfaction, vitality, optimism, and lower levels of depression and stress. This disposition toward gratitude appears to enhance pleasant feeling states more than it diminishes unpleasant ones. And I have isolated the very next sentence because it's so important. Grateful people do not deny or ignore the negative aspects of life. Sometimes we think that to be grateful means you have to have a Pollyanna approach to life. Oh, I only see the happy, good stuff, and I just act like bad stuff doesn't exist. No, that's not what it means to be a grateful person. You still deal with all of life. To be a grateful person doesn't mean that you deny or ignore the negative aspects of life. Second major conclusion, people with a strong disposition toward gratitude have the capacity to be empathic and to take the perspective of others. They are rated as more generous and more helpful by people in their social networks. All of that to say one thing. When we talk about gratitude, we're not just talking about an ought of obligation. We're talking about an ought of opportunity. It's the best way to live, plain and simple. And you don't want to miss out on it. Now, it's often just kind of assumed that gratitude is dependent on our circumstances. If life circumstances are good, we can be grateful. If they're bad, then we can't be grateful. And certainly, life circumstances play somewhat of a role in gratitude. But some of the most grateful people are also people who have endured some of the most difficult things in life. And instead of becoming bitter and resentful about life, they have taken a viewpoint, a perspective, that allows them to be grateful for the good things in life. They just have developed a certain perspective, a certain viewpoint, that allows them to be grateful in spite of the difficulties and the sufferings that they've experienced in life. There's a guy by the name of Roger Kimball, and I just want to share with you a quote. He says, "It is curious, perhaps, but the virtue most complicit with suffering is gratitude. Not, I hasten to add, gratitude for suffering itself, but rather gratitude for the amplitude that suffering jerks us into recognizing anew. In other words, it's very easy to take the good things in life for granted. And until they are taken away, or at least there's the threat of them being taken away, it's so easy not to appreciate them. But then when they are taken away, we are jerked back into a new reality that says, you can't just assume that the good things are the starting point. You can't just take those things for granted. Therefore, the people who have suffered the most, ironically, are also the ones who tend to have the most gratitude because they know not to take things for granted. And it's why often the people who have the easiest life and the easiest circumstances are the ones who have the most difficult time being grateful and therefore happy, because they think that's just the way it's supposed to be. I have never taken just health. I have never appreciated it the way I do now. You know, just waking up and having a day where you have decent energy just to do basic life stuff, I used to take that for granted. I don't anymore. It is something to be grateful for, but I couldn't get to that point until it was taken away. And that's just the human condition. We're all that way. Helen Keller, who was you know, born blind and deaf and basically spent her whole life that way, she said this: I have often thought that it would be a blessing if each human being were stricken blind and deaf for a few days at some time in early adult life. The darkness would make him more appreciative of sight. Silence would teach him the sounds of joy. You know, the people who most appreciate the tremendous benefits of good parents are those who had difficult parents. And it's not until you didn't have it that you really appreciate it. And again, that's just the human condition. It's not that we long to suffer. It's not that suffering in and of itself is a good thing. But at some point, it's going to come on all of us in different ways and for different lengths of time. And the question is, when you're in the middle of it, and then as you get through it, what is your new perspective? And if you can come to a perspective of gratitude, you are the most, you have the best gift of all. There was an elementary school teacher who was trying to teach her kids about gratitude. So she asked them to write down on a piece of paper one thing that they were thankful for. So the students bent over their desks and they began writing, and as they were writing, she would walking down the aisles, you know, looking at what they were writing down that they were thankful for. She came up to Bobby's desk, and he had one word for what he was thankful for: glasses. Bobby wore glasses. And the teacher was puzzled by this. You know, what little kid is thankful for glasses? No little kid wants to wear glasses. And so she said, you know, Bobby, that's very nice that you're thankful for your glasses, but why are you thankful for your glasses? Bobby said, well, I'm thankful for my glasses because they keep the boys from hitting me and they keep the girls from kissing me. And that's perspective. That is seeing the good in something that most of us would say is not so good. Now, speaking of perspective, the biblical perspective on gratitude is that gratitude is something we can have despite our circumstances. We don't have to have an easy life in order to be grateful. The Apostle Paul was a man who was well acquainted with suffering and hardship. I mean, he knew all about problems. He knew all about being mistreated. And Paul got to a point where he was sitting in a prison cell and his life was about to end. I mean, his days on this earth were truly numbered. And from a prison cell, and from the perspective of knowing he was about to die, Paul wrote these words. He said, "Give thanks in all circumstances, for this is God's will for you in Christ Jesus." Wow, this guy was not in great circumstances when he wrote this. Now, when you read something like that, what I need to make clear is that what Paul is not saying is that all circumstances are God's will. You know, it's not God's great desire for us that we be miserable and that we go through tough times, that we go through suffering. You know, sin is not God's idea. That is not what he desires for us. What Paul is saying here is not that suffering is God's will for us, but that gratitude is God's will for us. That is God's will for all people, is to be grateful. Because gratitude is just simply the best way to live. Now, Psalm 22 is not a passage in the Bible that you would typically associate with Thanksgiving. Because the first words of Psalm 22, which are fairly familiar, go this way: my God, why have you forsaken me? Why are you so far from saving me, so far from the words of my groaning?" These were the words spoken by Jesus on the cross when he yelled out, my God, why have you forsaken me?" Jesus was quoting Psalm 22 when he said that. These are words of abandonment. These are words of suffering. These are words of bad circumstances. Hardly the words of gratitude. And it doesn't get any better, because you go on in the psalm, verse 2 says, "Oh my God, I cry out by day, but you do not answer, by night, and I'm not silent." Again, there is this abandonment. Anyway, the psalm goes on. It's not a happy psalm. But when you get to verse 22, the one that's up on the screen now, the tone suddenly changes. Oh. Let's see. The one that's on the screen. He says, "I will declare your name to my brothers, and the congregation I will praise you." Well, this is the same person who was just saying, "Why have you forsaken me?" a few verses ago. Then he goes on in verse 24 and he says, "For he has not despised or disdained the suffering of the afflicted one. He has not hidden his face from him who has listened to his cry for help." The first response to these awful circumstances was one of sadness and anger and bitterness and abandonment. And folks, when we're in difficult circumstances, this is a completely appropriate response, is, my God, why have you, where are you? Why have you forsaken me? I don't see you anywhere. Because God understands all that. He understands the hurting and the crying and the pain and the not understanding part. But over the course of time, this psalmist is experiencing something, and what he finds when he gets to verse 20, or what he expresses in verse 22 over the course of time, is that in spite of all his bad circumstances, he realized God didn't forsake me. My circumstances may not be great, but God hasn't forsaken me. He hasn't walked away from me. And so he expresses that. Expresses his gratitude. And in talking about this, Eugene Peterson says this. He says, "The only serious mistake we can make when illness comes, when anxiety threatens, when conflict disturbs our relationships with others, is to conclude that God has gotten bored with us and has shifted his attention elsewhere." That's the only mistake we can make in these circumstances. You know, God's tired of me. He sees my lack of faith. He's gone on to someone who has more faith. Or, you know, God's got bigger things to worry about. you know, the Middle East crisis is much bigger than my suffering. Eh, you know, that's what, God's over in the Middle East. He's not here with me. It's the only mistake we can make. The year was 1636, and Europe was at war. In the town of Eilenburg, Germany, things were especially bad. They had been really, really nailed by the war. Three times that year, the city had been attacked and severely damaged. And when the armies left, they had been replaced by refugees who just came flooding into the city. And there just weren't enough resources for all the people. And so food was very scarce and disease ran rampant. And in this city, there was just one pastor, a guy by the name of Martin Rinkert. And in his journal, Martin Rinkert indicates that in the year 1636, he performed over 4,500 funerals in 1 year, over 4,500 funerals. In some days, he buried as many as 50 people in one day. You know, not exactly a gratitude-producing circumstance. But that same year, the year 1636, Martin Rinkert wrote a hymn. And it's a hymn that we still sing today as a hymn of thanksgiving. It's lasted for over 370 years. It goes like this. Now thank we all our God with hearts and hands and voices, who wondrous things has done, in whom his world rejoices, who from our mother's arms has blessed us on our way with countless gifts of love and still is ours today. You know, in spite of just the awful circumstances of that time, this pastor had the perspective, the viewpoint, to honestly be grateful, to put it into words, and we're blessed that those words are still with us today. So what we're going to do this morning is we're going to sing these words together, and then after that, I want to give you the opportunity to be grateful, because gratitude as an idea is nice, but it means nothing until it's actually put into practice. And there's nothing like being grateful and having no one to express it to. So this morning, as we sing this song, written 370 years ago in awful circumstances, I hope that you'll be thinking of something from this past year that you're grateful for. And maybe you're right in the middle of bad circumstances right now, or you're just coming through them, and you're gaining the perspective to see something good in spite of it all. Or maybe you've had a great year, and you're just flat out thankful for that. It would be a blessing to you and also a blessing to us to share that with us. And so we're going to sing the song together, and then when we're done, we'll ask you to share with us if you would. So you would come up and lead us, please. What's that?
Sure. Why don't you go ahead and stand as we sing this song together? We're going to sing all three verses of Now Thank We All Our God. And I think what we really want to do is look at these words and think about what they mean to us and how grateful we are to our Lord.